Hello and welcome to this episode of Invest Africa Insights. Today we're going to be talking about the role of digital payments in reducing foreign exchange risk and enabling trade finance in Africa. And to discuss this, I'm delighted to be joined by Bhairav Trivedi, CEO of Crown Agents Bank. Bhairav, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Eleanor. Looking forward to it.
So the trade finance gap in Africa sat at $80 billion even before the pandemic. So, you know, it's likely to be even higher now, while FDI flows have taken a pretty major hit in the last 2 years. And we know that one of the key challenges holding back trade and investment flows in Africa is foreign exchange volatility. So perhaps to kick us off, you could just explain why managing FX risk is so important in an African context and how Crown Agents Bank does that, helps companies to do that.
Exactly, Eleanor. So you absolutely hit it on the, on the point out there. I think Africa, a lot of the countries tend to have an extremely volatile foreign exchange regime. And, so this is broadly based upon socioeconomic conditions in each of the geographies. And so it continues to vary. What we do at Crown Agents Bank is if you think about a typical payment flow, on the one end, you have someone that's sending money. On the other hand, you have a recipient that's receiving it. And there's all of these steps that take place in between. And that's really what we provide the infrastructure in the middle to enable these flows to take place. So that is actually physically or virtually moving the money from one point to another, as well as converting it into the local currency and then being able to deliver it on the back end. Our typical customers tend to be large remittance organizations and fintechs. So you think about the Zeps of the world, the TransferWises of the world, et cetera, as well as large international development organizations. So most UN organizations, as well as charitable organizations. And then a lot of the governments and banks, not just regional banks, but also central banks. And what we do is facilitate the funds flow for all of these. And we are able to provide a quick, easy format that they can upload a file into, take the funds from there, and be able to provide on the back end the delivery into a single account or onto multiple accounts, depending upon what they choose.
And also, obviously, sort of the process of payments has been sort of transformed quite a lot over the last decade or so as the mobile money has really taken off in Africa in quite a big way. So, what are some of the big fintech developments, transformations that you've been seeing that you're most excited about, and sort of how they impacted your business?
So that's, I think Africa, the one thing that Africa has done really well is enact regulation to enable mobile money transactions. And this could be at the simplest form from a convenience standpoint, all the way to be able to enable financial inclusion for all members of society. And so if you look at countries like Ghana, the mobile phone companies have been allowed to pay some form of interest, which then allows people to actually store all of their funds on a mobile money account. And the interesting thing about a mobile money account is you don't need to have a physical address, et cetera, to actually set it up. You can do all of that virtually. Your account is always with you. Your money is always with you. You can transact at any point in time. So it's fascinating on that end. I think what they've done to the next level is now enable transactions so that your destination or your recipient point could be a mobile phone. And this allows remittance transactions as well as payment transactions. So think about the fact that you can stop at, I had stopped in Accra at a traffic light, and there were people selling all kinds of things, and almost every one of them had a mobile phone. And you said if you didn't have cash with you, they said no problem. Scan this QR code, enable the transaction. I mean, that's fascinating, right? I mean, so what Africa has done is actually taken mobile payments to the next level because they didn't have to go through a lot of the development phase and could jump step technology and move to the next level. I think some of the other things that we're seeing in the mobile money phase, as well as in the mobile phase, are the fact that now you've got the ability to do proof of life as well as ID on people. And so that ensures if I'm sending money to Alex, Alex is the actual recipient and it's not someone else pretending to be Alex. And that works really well for government payments, for development organization payments. So think about, refugees, think about aid payments, aid flows, etc. And finally, even as you look at pension payments, you know, that enables people to say, yes, this individual is really alive. This is the correct person we're sending the money out to. So it's fascinating. And I think this is just the tip of the iceberg on what is happening in Africa. I see a lot more development. There'll be some consolidation taking place in the industry. But I definitely think, you know, this is going to leapfrog over the next few years and take it to the next level. So very excited about what's happening in Africa on mobile payments.
And you mentioned there some of the sort of the financial inclusion that digital payments allows, and also those security issues that it sort of it allows for greater transparency in transactions in that way. So how are you seeing that impact? You know, we talked a little bit earlier about remittances and the important role that they play in cross-border flows into Africa. So what role are you seeing now for the diaspora in supporting economic development on the continent? And is this digital transformation making it easier for them to participate in economic development across the continent?
Sure. So, I think what it's not only doing is it's speeding up the process of transactions, but it's also enhancing, as we mentioned, financial inclusion, but facilitating even, you know, small businesses, et cetera, in the region and creating economic development. So let's take some examples. I think you go back a few years ago, I've been involved in the remittance market for a long time. And several years ago, you sent money to someone, they waited for 3 days, they then got the funds, they had to physically walk into a bank branch. Oftentimes, if these bank branches were in rather upmarket locations, then people were not allowed in. They were made to stand in a line. And then after so long, they actually got their money. And they were never sure why they didn't quite get what they were supposed to get, because, you know, you have several intermediaries and everyone takes a little bit, so that by the time you actually get it, it's a lot less than you were expecting. Fast forward to today. I mean, we've got companies all over the world that are enabling mobile transactions. And that means instantaneous payout. I send the money today to someone in Nigeria, someone in Angola, and they got the money instantly. Not only that, but it goes straight onto their phone. So now it's in their pocket, in their wallet. They can spend that money immediately. And what that does is then actually enhances the financial ability of that individual. So you've got, you know, not just the financial inclusion, but think about small business payments. I mean, you know, for them, liquidity is key. And if now I'm able to provide liquidity instantaneously, they could then go ahead and actually use those funds to actually go ahead and enhance their businesses. So we are seeing a lot of these remittance flows coming back in by the diaspora in these geographies. And what they're doing is basically facilitating small businesses to start. So this, think about the little mom and pop businesses. You know, I have an idea, or I have a small little store in a little village somewhere, and what I do is sell certain widgets. And now I can buy more of those widgets. I can get paid for those widgets. And everyone has the ability. So I've got a little mobile wallet, and not just, you know, so I'm being supported by my family that's working abroad. And they're enabling me to actually improve my sustenance in my geography because, and be valuable to society. So I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of that development socioeconomic taking place across these geographies just because of that.
And obviously with sort of any big transformation, it can take a little while for the policy framework to catch up, for regulatory frameworks to catch up. And we've seen a few African countries sort of start to dip their toe in the water with digital currencies and central banks starting to get involved in this space as well. You know, for example, in Nigeria with the e-Naira. So how do you see digital currencies like that transforming the financial landscape in Africa? And from a regulatory perspective, do you think the central banks are sort of hitting the right note there?
Wow, thanks, Eleanor. That was quite a lot of questions on digital currencies. So let's go through that sequentially, right? Let's talk about the need for digital currencies. I think one of the things that happens is with traditional paper currencies, the money supply in the market is not accurately reflected. That means, you know, if a government is, or central bank has issued X number in notes, one isn't really sure whether that's money in circulation or whether that's under someone's mattress, or that could have been burnt, that could have been damaged, that could have been lost, etc. The advantage of digital currencies is that everyone knows at any point in time exactly who has it and where those currencies are moving, right? So it's great for the central banks. It's probably not great for the bad guys because now that money is extremely traceable. I think that being said, you know, because digital currencies do need a critical mass, right? We need adoption. And so effectively, the central bank has got three parts of this entire equation. The first one is issuance of digital currencies, and that's going to be something that central banks are going to do, facilitated by technology. The second is distribution of digital currencies. And traditionally, currency is being distributed through banks. And so I would probably say that, you know, central banks could probably facilitate that distribution through their banking channels as well as directly from the central bank. And I know in Nigeria, you know, it's just been the start of the e-Naira, but it's been fairly successful. I believe more than 500,000 merchants have already signed up for it. So, you know, I'm extremely positive about what's happening there. I think the third part of it is then really taking that digital currency to the next level and being able to enable the currency to enable cross-border payments as well as payments, so acceptance of the digital currency. And that's where, you know, you'll find a lot more fintechs, technology companies come into play because all of them would have to actually be able to accept digital currencies, set up the infrastructure for doing so, and then after that, take it to the next level. In addition, you know, I think one of the big advantages of digital currencies is the enablement of cross-border flows. So today, if you wanted to go from a Naira to a Ghanaian CD, you'd actually have to go up to a US dollar and then go down because there's no direct correlation between the two. With digital currencies, you could convert that so that now you go directly from an e-Naira to an e-CD without the need to go to an e-dollar. And I think that one, it improves efficiencies in the market. The second is it, you know, it reduces leakage. If you think about, you know, when you go up to another third currency and come back, you traditionally have a certain amount of leakage because everyone wants to make a small little few bips here, a few bips there. And that actually gets reduced significantly as well as the system becomes a lot more efficient. Settlement takes place instantaneously as opposed to taking a lot longer. So I do believe that digital currencies will definitely enhance inter-Africa as well as intra-Africa trade. I think the problem is maturity, number one, and the second is acceptance. So it has to reach a certain critical mass before it gets to that. So I'm very excited to see what's happening in Africa on digital currencies. It's something that we at Crown Agents Bank are closely watching because we definitely feel we can play a critical part in that. But again, as I said, it has to have a certain level of critical mass and a certain level of, you know, acceptance across the geographies. So that's what we're waiting for.
Now, it's interesting you say that about trust as well, because, you know, with the number of cryptocurrencies that exist that, you know, that are not, and these are different, these are sort of central bank currencies, you know, state currencies, but in the public imagination, they can get a bit confused.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so let me give you a couple of thoughts on, you know, why crypto is slightly different from your traditional central bank digital currencies. You think about crypto, I think the attractiveness of crypto is one, is its great buzzword, right? I say Bitcoin, everyone turns and looks and says, geez, this guy must know what he's talking about. But I think it goes beyond that, right? I mean, you look at crypto, and crypto is in the news constantly because it's highly speculative. And that's fantastic if you're speculating, you're trying to make money, or you're trying, you're trying to gamble in some kind of currency or some kind of appreciation. I think when we get down to core payments and think about payments for businesses, think about payments for remittances, I'm sending money to mom. Do I really want her getting a cryptocurrency where she's not absolutely sure what the value is? And today it could be 100, tomorrow it could be 80, and day after it could be 120, right? So I want surety of what mom is going to get. That's at the simplest level on diaspora remittances. When you get to corporate payments, I mean, I'm paying for a good, I need to know exactly what I'm paying for it. And so that's why I think you're finding that crypto, while it's acceptable in the virtual and digital worlds, it doesn't really work on large corporate payments. And that's where central bank digital currencies definitely are better placed than crypto, because there's a fixed value allocated to those, and that stays fixed. It's not speculative. So I think that's the fundamental difference between crypto and digital currencies.
That's interesting. Yeah, so, sort of talking to some banks, even on this podcast, we've been talking a bit about their frustrations that they're regulated differently to some of these newer fintechs, and sort of this feeling that perhaps it's almost like the Wild West on some of these things, whereas those established banks are sort of subject to a different regulation. So perhaps this almost mainstreaming of the technology is part, do you think it's part of a step to sort of coming to the right regulatory approach, coming to a sort of widespread usage for this kind of technology?
Absolutely. And I think it gives a much greater level of comfort to the central banks, right? I mean, if someone's using crypto to pay for something, I don't know who they are. I don't know what the source of those funds is. I don't know where it's coming from, right? Because crypto is a virtual currency that transcends borders, right? And to that end, it makes me as a regulator extremely uncomfortable. We are seeing some geographies where they are accepting cryptocurrencies as, you know, a digital currency that's acceptable in that. So I think Ecuador is a great example where they've accepted Bitcoin. But those tend to be few and far between. I think most countries are saying, listen, let's develop our own digital currency. And that way we get all the benefit of regulation. We get the stability in the currency, as well as we get the ability to predict where exactly that money is at any point in time and be able to make sure that, you know, we avoid the embarrassment of anonymous payments, et cetera. That's what governments and regulators are extremely concerned about.
And obviously the other big sort of policy shift that we've been seeing in Africa is the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, which also has a heavy component of cross-border payments and has been grappling with these very same issues around foreign exchange stability and trust in cross-border payments. And so, you know, Afreximbank launched this year their Pan-African payment and settlement system, which is looking to address those issues in the sort of in a digital space. So what's your view of the rollout of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement from a cross-border payments sort of perspective? Do you think there's been good progress there?
Absolutely. And I think Afreximbank has done a phenomenal job in putting together PAPS, right? Because I think the concept is great, right? We want a common settlement system that works across it. And we've seen geographies that have done this extremely successfully. So go back to India, and they have a universal payment interface called UPI. And what they've done is virtually disintermediate players in the market so that now it's a level playing field, right? Now, that works in a single country where you've got multiple states, and India's pretty big, lots of population, et cetera. But they've got billions of payments going across that platform on a daily basis. When you get to Africa, it's a little more difficult, I would say, to implement, because now you've got the ability, you have the necessity to do it across borders, right? And so that means there is actually foreign exchange or currency translation process that needs to take place, right? If I'm going from one country to the other, I need to settle in a different currency. And today, given that there's no common infrastructure for settlement in local currencies, you have to actually go up to a US dollar or a common G10 currency to then come back to the destination currency. So that definitely would require a liquidity need on most central banks for settling in US dollars on a daily basis. And that could be taxing on the economy. So that's one of the issues that needs to be resolved. Not a big issue, but it's something definitely that we need to keep in mind. I think the second thing that they've done on their settlement system, which is, you know, had great intent, is, you know, the ability to facilitate cross-border trade, right, as the African Free Trade Agreement envisages. The key thing that we've got to watch out for in that regard is, it's a little bit of chicken and egg, right? I mean, people will join that platform if there's critical mass. But to get critical mass, you need people to join the platform, right? And so that's really going to be the push. And it's done well in certain countries, like I mentioned, India at UPI level, only because it was mandated by the central bank and it was a single geography, so all the other banks had to adopt it. Here, while you need individual central banks of different countries to mandate it or push it, you know, it's going to be rather difficult, because what it does is it does level the playing field. And so some of the largest banks in these countries would probably say, listen, do I really want this bank that's 1/20th my size to now be able to compete with me on the same level, right? Because they might have established platforms for doing this, facilitating these payments. And what they've done is I've basically just taken a David and allowed them to actually compete with the Goliath in that platform, right? And so that's going to be a critical thing. Is it insurmountable? No, absolutely not. But I think it'll take a little time to get out there. And as I said, it's always going to be a chicken and egg thing, right? Of getting acceptance so that people join, but getting people to join so that acceptance is there. So I'm very bullish about what Afreximbank Bank has done on that, in that regard, to facilitate cross-border trade. I think it's something that's, you know, it's gone a wait and watch at this point, but I do think it's something that's going to be very valuable for the geographies there.
And now, so getting towards the end, I always like to look to the future. I mean, we've done quite a lot of looking to the future, really throughout this conversation. But I think it can be difficult for people to identify. You know, we're talking about digital currencies, we're talking about the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, new payment systems. What do you think are the big developments there that are really here to stay, you know, that stand to be the most transformative for Africa? If you're looking, you're projecting forwards for Crown Agents Bank over the next 10 years, you know, what are those key trends that you're most excited about that you think will really sort of deliver the most for the continent?
So I'll take it in order of, you know, short term to the longest term, right? I mean, if I look at the short term, I definitely think mobile payments is going to be big. It already is big. Let's face it, Africa has more mobile payments than almost any other geography out there, right? That being said, I do believe that most people are thinking about the next level of payments, right? So what does that mean? Does it mean biometric validation? You know, where could it lead? But I think, you know, at some point, right now, a mobile payment requires us to have the mobile phone with us. But is that really a necessity? Can I be who I am without having to identify myself through a mobile phone, right? And so I do believe at some point we'd get to biometric payments. I am very excited about digital currencies. As I've said, you know, it's been amazing that, you know, certain countries have taken the leadership role in actually implementing these. I do believe that we can leverage blockchain technology as well as DLT technology to actually be able to facilitate these transactions and allow cross-border flows. And I think at some point, cross-border flows will level the playing field so that countries are not dependent on G10 currencies to actually be able to facilitate these flows. And then finally, long range, I think, you know, as I mentioned, PAPS is an initiative that is key and it's going to be, you know, very good. I see it on the horizon as being acceptable and facilitating intra-Africa flows. And, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, it couldn't be facilitating digital currencies and settlements. So, you know, I think a combination of all these make Africa a very exciting market for payments. As I said, they've leapfrogged technology. They haven't gone through the growing pains of a lot of other geographies. They've been first to implement, and that came about because of specific need in the market. But that has transcended itself now to becoming extremely convenient for people to use. And that's really what is pushing forward the technology. So very excited about the potential for Africa going forward.
It's great. Very fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on and speaking today about all these really exciting developments.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much, Eleanor, for hosting me.